Meeting to order. We do not have a quorum, but we're going to get started anyway. Before we get to the first bill on the agenda, as most of you know, for those of you who may be new to the committee, we do like to recognize people all across the state who have, whether it's inspired or done great things in agriculture. And today, we are going to be recognizing an individual that, I consider him a friend, and I'm kind of an emotional guy here as well, but, someone that's inspired me as well. And so I would like to go ahead and honor a House resolution honoring Mr. Ryan Buck. And Ryan, there he is, right there. It states, whereas our state depends on its family farms to put food on our tables, and thanks to proud, responsible operators of family farms, we live better lives with more nutritious food options. And whereas Ryan Buck is the president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association and grows corn and soybeans on his family farm near Goodhue. And whereas Ryan has been farming for 11 years, and his farm grows 1,200 acres of corn and soybeans, and he helps custom farm 400 acres for his neighbors. And whereas, when he's not working on the farm, he sells crop insurance, Ryan became an officer on his county corn growers board in 2005 and was elected to the MCGA board in 2009. And whereas, besides farming and MCGA-related activities, Ryan enjoys deer hunting, turkey farming, traveling, and spending time with his wife, Lauren. I don't understand that one, buddy. We'll come back to that. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it thanks and commends MCGA President, former President, we'll come back to that as well, for his tremendous contribution to our state's agriculture commodity. It's dated April 6, 2015, signed by Speaker of the House, Kurt Dowd, Rules and Legislative Administration, and the Majority Leader, Joyce Pepin, myself, and State Representative Tim Kelly. And members, one of Mr. Buck's claim to fame, when he went in as president of the Minnesota Corn Growers, I think corn was at about $8, and when he left, it was at $4. And that's like a $4 reduction. And I wanted to put that in the resolution, but you can thank Bratz here for saying, no, that would not be appropriate. But Ryan, you've been a true inspiration and a friend. So please, congratulate. He also has a great sense of humor, and I always tell him, I said, you know, your wife, as mentioned here, your wife is beautiful, and you're not. I just don't get it. I'm teasing, friend. I'm teasing. So welcome and congratulations.
Even a blind squirrel
will find enough. Yeah, that's correct. So thank you for being here. We do have a quorum. First on the agenda, we have House File 2058, but before we get to that, do we have a motion to approve the minutes dated March 26th?
So move.
Everybody wants to so move them. Representative Miller, was that you? Representative Fabian. All right, Representative Fabian moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, Representative Pearson?
Mr. Chair, yes. May I move to have the House File 2058 submitted to the omnibus for consideration?
Representative Pearson moves House File 2058 to be held over for possible inclusion. We have the bill before us. Representative Petersburg, welcome to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. After that rousing standing ovation, it's hard for me to follow that. Maybe you'll do the same thing for this bill, which is a very good bill. I've been hearing from a lot of nutritionists in my area that we need to get more fruits and vegetables to people, and that really is a healthy way of doing that. This initiative will help do that, this particular bill. Basically, what the bill does is it allows us as a state to sponsor and promote the opportunity for farmers of vegetables and other crops to go directly to markets and go directly to sellers and users of the commodities directly through a particular program that is initiated in southern Minnesota as well. And to that, I would like to turn it over to my testifier, former Congressman Tim Penny, who is now head of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, to talk a little bit more about that. And you should have in your packet some information about the program in which he will be referring to. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Penny.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name and who you represent for the record.
Will do. Tim Penny. I'm the president of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation.
Welcome.
And thank you, Representative Petersburg, for your advocacy of this legislation. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to address your committee. Our foundation has been around for 25 years. We are dedicated to the economic future of South Central Southeastern Minnesota, and we invest in three key areas. We help smaller towns create and maintain community funds so that they can invest in their own future. We invest in early childhood because we believe that to be a long-term bet on a quality education and a quality workforce. And then about half of our budget is dedicated to entrepreneurial activity, business startup loans, and other such efforts. But in that realm, it's drawn us into the local foods arena, growing opportunity for local foods production and processing in our region, and growing demand for these local foods products, both at restaurants and grocery stores, but also at some of our public institutions, our hospitals, our schools. And the collaboration that we have been a part of over the last few years led to a premier event which we co-sponsored last November to allow local foods producers and processors, primarily from South Central Southeastern Minnesota, but we drew from across the entire state, to a trade show which not only drew about 1,200 visitors to sample and learn about local foods here in Minnesota, but also roughly 50 buyers who came to sample the stuff, and we are still compiling documentation of the number of sales that occurred, but it was wildly successful. We sponsored the event along with the Mayo Foundation, along with Renewing the Countryside, and then Renewing the Countryside did get a local foods grant from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to help support this event along with some other local foods activities. Legislation before you would allow the Department of Agriculture to continue to be a sponsor of this event, we believe that would be great. On the fourth page, I think, of the material I gave you, it does list the various organizations that were identified with this event last year. We believe that the event will only get bigger and better as the years go by. We know that the Mayo Clinic, not only through its Mayo Foundation financial support, but through its promotional efforts with its employees and with those that are visiting the clinic, is going to help to draw an even bigger audience for this every year. We also know, based on surveys at the end of the event, that both the producers and processors, as well as the buyers, felt that it was well worth their time, and again, a lot of financial relationships that were established between these producers and processors and various buyers. And so our mission is to create this as a premier event for the state of Minnesota to feature local foods. We know that this is increasingly a priority and an interest of the Department of Ag, but rather than turning to them for sponsorship, where I think they're currently limited to $5,000 sponsorships, we thought that it might be worthwhile to talk to this committee about the possibility of allowing the Department of Ag to become a sponsor of this event again in the next two fiscal years. So that's the purpose of the request, and you can see by the five-page sheet that's been handed out some of the statistics that bear out the reach that this event had. My sense is that the department may use this money in a variety of ways, but it would be expected that one of the key uses of these dollars would be to support this annual quote-unquote feast festival. And okay. And with that, I think we'll both stand ready.
Questions,
Mr. Petersburg. Any questions for the testifiers, members? Any questions? So, Mr. Penny, I don't know if I should address you as congressman. Once a congressman, always a congressman. So, with do you see something like this being replicated across the state?
Right now, our foundation is one of six rural initiative foundations, and we are in constant dialogue with our counterparts across the state about their interest in advancing local foods within their region. So I expect that at the very least we're going to be including them in the promotion of this event so that producers and processors from all across Minnesota can increasingly look to this event as an opportunity to not only educate the public about the value of local foods and the growth of the local foods industry, but more importantly to connect with potential buyers for what they're producing.
All right. Thank you. And the reason I bring that up is we have some bills around urban agriculture initiatives that would, I would see, would benefit from people attending this event. And also there's some bills to do something very similar as it pertains to food hubs across the state as well. So when it comes to advertising, how do we get the word out, Congressman?
Well, I should have copied one more page from our summary report. There was extensive advertising about this event accomplished last year to promote the event. We have, within the region and beyond, organizations that are involved with local foods and healthy foods that are helping to promote the event. So, again, I think we're going to get better at this with each passing year. But for the first time ever, a year ago in November, we drew 1,200 visitors for this event, and I think that's indication that for the event being a first time activity, that we did a pretty good job of getting the word out. But we do have a committee that is working now to promote the event. And the main sponsors of the event, and you can see them again on that fourth page, are all involved in promoting this through their own circles. And assuming we can rely on the Department of Agriculture to be an ongoing sponsor of the event, I believe it can be integral to the kind of work that they are increasingly doing in the local foods realm. You mentioned some of these urban organizations and food hubs. We do have a collaborative of groups and organizations that are involved in helping to shape this particular event, and there's representation for most of those folks in that collaborative.
Thank you. We do have a question. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe more of a comment than a question. Welcome, Mr. Congressman. Good to see you again. I like your emphasis on connecting buyers and sellers, because I think in greater Minnesota we have a tremendous potential for growing the local foods market, but as I see, the problem is getting the market to sell that homegrown produce and food type thing. So when you talk about getting together in developing that market with your buyers and sellers working together, I like that emphasis, and I support your bill. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments, members? Any other questions or comments? Any closing words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to say, this is probably one of your better bills that you've seen in front of you. At least that's my belief. And this really does go to really understanding what it is about getting fresh fruits and vegetables and things that we grow here in Minnesota consumed in Minnesota. It really is about getting us healthier as well. And so I think it's a great promotion. It's a great opportunity for us in ag field to really say, hey, this is what we have. Let's use it. So thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no further comments, Representative Pearson renews his motion to have House File 2058 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you.
Next, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File House File 1845 be considered for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. House File 1845 has been moved by Representative Miller. We have the bill before us. Representative Swazinski, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Lead Hoppy, House File 1845 is strictly language talking about a feasibility study for the importation to the state of Minnesota of bait fish. Because of Minnesota's great resource that we have, the 10,000 lakes, and also as a resource, but also as a sporting destination, the state of Minnesota is dreadfully low in capacity when it comes to the ability to produce the bait fish needed for those anglers in order to pursue their sport and to help support tourism within the state of Minnesota. This bill is simply a study to look at the possibility of looking at other states that farm these bait fish for the allowance of import those in the state of Minnesota to help support tourism and our sporting way of life. We have a few folks here that would like to speak on behalf of the bill, and then we'd be open to any questions that the committee may have for us. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Welcome, testifiers. Please state your name, who you represent, and begin.
Rob Hutchins, owner of Oswald Fisheries.
Ron Mavison, owner of Ken's Bait Service.
Was Davidson?
Mavison.
Mavison.
Ron Mavison.
Thank you.
Ken's Bait Service.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. So welcome. Please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. There's been a huge bait shortage in the state of Minnesota for many years. There's been a number of reasons for that. Could be loss of water. Could be the demand from fishermen, from competition between the fishermen and private aquaculture itself, raising of the game fish. They eat up a lot of minnows for feeding walleyes, which then in turn gets stocked in Minnesota waters. Another part of the problem could be due to the loss of water, freeze-outs, you know, with the Minnesota winters, and especially right now with the drought that we're in. A lot of these water bodies are having freeze-outs, which causes a shortage. We cannot raise enough shiners or minnows in the state of Minnesota. It's due to a number of things. One of them could be the short growing season. Down in some of these southern states, they do have longer periods of time where the water is warmer. It's also be cost prohibitive to try to warm the water to raise them indoors, something like that. Importing is currently being done on some terms into the state of Minnesota. I do know that the Minnesota DNR does import catfish. I actually did talk to another private company from Iowa yesterday where they can get an import permit to import fish for stocking into Minnesota waters. So to me, it just seems like maybe a little bit of a double standard. Also, whether we like to admit it or not, shiners are coming into the state of Minnesota from fishermen. Fishing, you know, is a huge industry in the state of Minnesota. Somebody's got a really expensive boat, an expensive truck, and they need bait, they're going to go get it. They'll just drive across the river. The fishermen will get the shiners that they need, and they'll get it and take it back to wherever they want to go. The purpose, hopefully, of this bill would be that we can do a study so that we can better track and understand where these fish are coming from and where they're going. We want to make sure that they're farm-raised, they're health-certified from AIS-free farms. That's the big goal here, so that we know what's coming into the state rather than it just being bootlegged. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So, you have anything to add?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak. I started in this business when I was 12 years old with my dad, and we take care of 120 stores locally. And we've got two shiner farmers that raise shiners, one that raises shiners solely for us, and they've done everything to try to step it up. The one shiner guy, he's a third-generation shiner farmer. The other one's a second generation. And we're getting about I'd say less than 10% what we were 5 years ago. We can't produce the bait. Minnesota's a walleye state. The fishermen want these shiners. We can't produce them. I got 120 stores that haven't had a shiner in them since December. They won't have a shiner in them. Anything we raise, we'll save for next winter because there's such a demand for it in the winter. We won't even give them to them this spring for the fishing open. We're going to let them go without them and save them for next winter. Arkansas, Kentucky, they can raise these shiners effectively. They can raise enough shiners in 3 months to supply the whole United States. All these things are health certified, tested. My guess is it's a healthier, a safer bait to sell than the stuff that's coming out of the wild that's not being tested. I mean, these are all tested. They're moving them all over. Wisconsin's got them. Iowa's got them. South Dakota's got them. Up and down the East Coast. I just think that Minnesota, I mean, we're the walleye capital of the world. People come from all over here to fish, and I just think that we should, as a bait distributor, I'm supposed to do everything I can to bring good quality bait and make this an enjoyable experience, give these fishermen what they want in a health, safe way. That's my job. That's why I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Any questions? Any questions for the testifiers, members? So, Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so what do we have impediments to implementing this in our state, or as far as the raising of the shiners?
Who would like to take that?
What's that? Can you repeat the question?
Oh, Representative Grunhagen.
You know, why aren't we raising shiners in our state? Is there...
We are raising shiners in the state, but just, we don't really have the right climate for them to grow them fast and the waters to do it. The people that are raising them are getting less and less every year. They're almost hardly getting any. And these guys have tried everything.
Representative Grunhagen, follow-up?
It seems like Iowa, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota have it.
They're importing.
They're all importing too. Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If we can import certified AIS-free shiners today from Arkansas, why do we need this study? Why can't we just go ahead and do it, pass some legislation and do it?
We'd like to take that question.
Mr. Chair,
Swazinski.
Members, I believe that we cannot currently import them. The idea is that this study would look at the possibility and the feasibility of actually doing it because
the change of the law
to allow it.
Chair Anderson, follow up.
Let's change the law.
You want an amendment?
Comfortable with that language too, sir. But
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I fish for walleye myself, and I am sympathetic to your, and I'm relieved by your comments about wanting to make sure that they're safe, bringing them in. One of my concerns was importing shiners that might not be safe or might, cause other problems. So I appreciate your doing that, and I guess I would support Anderson's comment about let's change the law rather than waiting. But maybe the study is necessary to make sure that this is a safe process and we want to protect our waters, too.
Thank you, Representative Bly.
If we bring stuff in that isn't safe, I mean, it's just going to put us out of business. We're going to be the first ones gone.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a win. It has to be good.
Now, Mr. Hutchinson.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, basically, like Mr. Mapison said, right, we want to do a study. It seems like in the past we've had some backlash from the DNR as far as we don't want to import, and the reasoning was different diseases, AIS, stuff like that. And we agree. That puts us out of business. I got to tell my 30 employees, I'm sorry, you got to go home. I don't have work. I haul bait all the way from Utah to the East Coast, to Vermont, every state in between. Every state from the Dakotas, Kansas, Oklahoma, everything east of there, you can import farm-raised, health-certified fish except the state of Minnesota. So if it's being done illegally, to me, we need to try to come up with a protocol to do it the safe way. It's going to be done anyways. Let's work together, both the experts, the university, the scientists, the DNR. Let's work together and try to get a protocol put down.
Well, Mr. Hutchinson, I believe in your opening testimony, you brought up a lot of the questions that we don't have answers to, correct? And that's why you're looking for the feasibility study?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Bly, did you have a follow-up on that?
No, I wholeheartedly agree. We need to make sure it's safe, and probably a study is warranted to try to establish the best practice for doing it. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an excellent approach, and it's probably a long time coming. One, I guess, a little bit of advice would be to make sure that the groups that are going to be involved at this, they understand this is a legitimate commercial process here. And we've got, you know, with the Department of Agriculture, they understand moving bees, they understand moving animals of all types, both within the country and internationally. So we need to make sure we approach this with a look that this is another key element of our tourist industry, both in and outside of the state, and not just look at why are we different from everybody around us? That should be a stark indication that maybe we're not up to speed, and we just really need some attention here. And again, make sure that one of the primary goals here is to come up with a way that we can deal with this on a rational commercial basis so our folks in all elements of the industry can compete here. It looks like, as the chairman or the other chairman indicated, we need the information here to fix this and do it fairly soon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking, and I didn't see in the bill, and it says fiscal impact not yet known. So there is no fiscal note on this, correct?
Representative Miller, there will be.
Okay, but it can't be much money.
It's being held over, and so we will have a fiscal note.
I guess I would just, in light of the research that I've asked for, I think this is also good research because it's about economic development, so I think that's a good thing. But I hope this study can be done quickly and pretty straightforward because this is an industry that needs to be taken care of, and the fact that there's several other states that already believe that this bait is health and safety. I hope we can come to that conclusion and get this passed even by next session, perhaps.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Mr. Hutchinson or Mr. Mavison, do we know what the economic potential benefit would be to the state, or we would find that in the study we're hoping, correct?
Mr. Chair, committee, basically, I just jotted down some numbers, and this is just wholesale numbers because I don't do retail. My guesstimate is we're looking at approximate number for Shiners of about 15,000 gallons that we're short every year, which is, you know, it's only 1.5 million, but then you have to extrapolate that out to retail and then to the customer themselves. As far as fathead minnows, we're looking at approximate number of 65,000 gallons of minnows that we're short every year, both the fishing industry and aquaculture itself, which, as you all know, is a multi-million dollar industry in the state of Minnesota itself, which we hate to lose. And if we don't have the feed we need to continue, we just decline our numbers. But that's a $2.6 million at the wholesale level. And then, obviously, it grows exponentially.
Yes.
Just,
Mr. Mavis.
Mr. Chair, just to break that down a little bit more, since I work with the bait stores a lot, an average bait store, which would not be a big bait store, just a medium-sized one, would sell 10 gallons of Shiners a week. Their profit on that would be $140 a gallon. If the minnows aren't so good, maybe $120. So these small-time bait stores, mom-and-pop bait stores, that struggle so hard to stay open are losing through the winter months, $1,500 a week, $1,500 a week. They're losing not having this bait. It doesn't seem to get replaced by other baits like fatheads or suckers. I don't see my sales go up because we don't have them. It just seems like it's lost business for them.
It adds up in a hurry, doesn't
it?
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions, members? Any other questions? Any closing comments?
No, appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee, and we appreciate your consideration for inclusion in your omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you. great testimony. We appreciate it. This is long overdue, I believe. So Representative Miller renews his motion to have House File 1845 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you. What's that? Some Metza. Do you want to go ahead and move your bill here to get it before us?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like House File 1905 for possible inclusion.
All right, we have House File 1905 before us. To your bill, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. The essential idea with this bill is to take a current facility, NERC, which is a correctional facility for nonviolent offenders, and they currently service a lot of our local farms within the area, and you'll see a map coming around. It's for only home consumption right now, and so our idea kind of came about when the facility put in for a bonding request and they needed an upgrade to their kill floor. And so we thought with a meat cutter shortage, would be a great program to have there to provide an opportunity for some job placement, as well as to potentially expand the local facility into a USDA certified processing center locally, which we're still working with some of the partners on getting that all put together language wise. But this would essentially provide a great resource for our local farmers who are already there and getting their products out to the local grocery stores, potentially schools, hospitals, and take their small ag operations and hopefully help grow them a little bit over the course of time. And so far, Mr. Chair, the only people I've really heard against the bill's idea are PETA, and so
I
wasn't too worried about that.
So, Representative Metza, I went to the Lamb and Wool annual convention, and I was talking to some growers, producers up in, it would be the northeast part of the state, and they were really concerned about lack of processing in that area. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so essentially, and that's the language we're still working on with the different vested groups, but the processing up there are the closest we can get to get a product in the grocery store is either Cannon Falls or St. Cloud. And so, you know, it's quite a trip for our farmers to get out and return with the product and have any room for profit. So the idea would be to get the facility in the shape that it would need to be in to be able to handle that local processing and help facilitate that need.
So, Representative Metza, the other thing is help me understand or how to any perceived controversy around this bill. I mean, here you have inmates, if you will, with knives, etc., right? Help just walk through the talking points, if you could. How do we get the general public comfortable with this?
Well, our local public up in St. Louis County and the surrounding five counties operate in partnership to run the facility as a regional correction facility. They essentially have been doing this since 1930. To my knowledge, there's not been one single incident of violence at the workplace in the butchering shop there. So they've got a good long track record of servicing local farms. Representative Franzen was saying that when she was younger and lived in Saginaw, which is real close to the facility there, that she'd bring in her hogs for slaughtering, I believe, from her cage, she called them, but I believe she meant pen, if Chair Anderson remembers that hearing. So it was a little bit fun, but yeah, they're already doing this. There's 400 some odd farmers annually who are getting their cows there right now for home consumption. There's hundreds of chickens done every year for local farmers, and not any incidents there either. So
Representative Metza, there's been a proven track record, if you will, How do we ensure the public, what safeguards are in place to ensure the public that the food is safe as it comes out of there, in addition to what the track record?
Yep, so essentially what we'd be looking to build would be a fully certified USDA plant. They'd have the training program as part of it with our butchers, which there currently is a trainer up there. And we'd probably have to add a staff, some management for the program, but there'd be a lot of inspectors hands-on that would process it just like any other USDA certified plant out there right now in the state of Minnesota.
All right. Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Representative, I appreciate your bill. Talk for a second about the size of this facility, and would this need to have a cash flow that works or is positive? And talk about the numbers that you would hope to process at the facility, ranging, you said, from hogs and cattle to chickens to sheep. Just talk about the economics of it.
Representative Metza. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, basically the need, I guess we'd see what's out there. I don't currently know. I had a meeting in district over the break, and about 20 local farmers showed up and expressed interest. I'd imagine that number would grow. Some of the farmers sent a team member, so to say, and they spoke on behalf of about three or four local farms. And the facility itself is already being funded by the state of Minnesota, and so the additional cost would be kind of what you see in the fiscal note, which I believe is $90,000 in 2016, $90,000 in 2017 to get it running, and then $15,000 each year after that. And so I'd imagine once it grows into a full processing center, it might be a little larger of a cost, but at the same time we'll be getting a return benefit as those low or nonviolent offenders get released back out and get jobs. So I would hope that it would break even for Minnesota in the long run.
Chair Anderson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Metz, I just want to compliment you on this bill. For those of you who aren't on the Agriculture Policy Committee, you missed a really excellent testimony, I thought, and we thoroughly looked at this, and I think you're really creative about creating another alternative up in your neck of the woods, where we know there's challenges with employment, and this is a nice agricultural response to that. And for those of you who didn't get to see the folks who came down from the facility, I thought they made a compelling case, and it just seems like I'm always looking for things where multiple facilities, multiple angles are coming together, and there's you're creating a market, you're serving farmers, you're training people in who need training in jobs that are needed. It goes on and on. This is one of those bills where there's multiple things working together well.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed that meeting at Agriculture Policy. I'm curious. This maybe I wasn't paying attention close enough, but these animals would be brought on the facility. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then inmates would do the butchering or learn how to. So initially, excuse me, when they start learning how to cut up meat, I'm assuming that the first practicality is education, so there's a little bit of a weeding out of someone that might be a higher risk. Would that be, do you know how that works?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, essentially my understanding is right now they already have a program coordinator who focuses strictly on the meat cutting aspect. They handle all their own, and I should have maybe mentioned this previous, I've had quite a few stops, so I'm leaving out a few of the details. But the facility itself right now already is self-sufficient in terms of they supply all the meat, or I shouldn't say all, a majority of the meat that they consume there, a majority of the vegetables, so they're unique in that way. And this essentially is a program already where it's a work farm. There's 150 beds out there, and so as inmates come in, they get tasked with something that they're comfortable with, and I'm sure through the course of their stay, you know, get weeded out of a few different things, potentially gardening being one of them too, if they don't enjoy that. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing this forward, Representative Metz. I actually live closer to that facility than any other representative. There's never been any issues as far as security surrounding there, and my family has benefited from some of the programs that are existing there. They run a greenhouse. They run the butchering services. We've taken advantage of that with some of the chickens that we bought, that type of thing. My neighbor was actually incarcerated there for a year, and he didn't want to leave the shop where he was being trained in woodworking, that type of thing. They do have an excellent program for developing vocational skills for these people. I think this is an excellent addition to that facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Metza, you talked about the bonding bill request. Mm-hmm. Is this contingent on the bonding bill, and as far as the implementation date around all this, as far as the fiscal component?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, I think that the fiscal side of it, we'd want to get the program designed and functioning properly, so I think that it can move forward with this current number attached to it. And with the bonding, it would be contingent on getting that done. I know it's the commissioner of Corrections is in support of it. They put in the request for the bonding because the current facility is outdated, and because it's state run, they assume that it will, it, and it's included in the governor's emergency bonding request. So it is contingent on it, but the work can still get done and wouldn't hold it up.
All right. Thank you, Representative Metza. And Representative Metza, do we have an idea about how many people could potentially come out of this program and therefore be productive citizens in this industry? Do we have any idea?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think that there would be probably a couple dozen a year, potentially, yeah, that could come in and out. It's a rotating facility, obviously. Not everyone's there for the same amount of time, but they will have a regular crew of folks going through, and I could get back to you once we have a better idea of what that is. But I know with 150 people there, I'd say a dozen or so would not be out of the question.
Yeah. So, Representative Metza, the other thing is in your title, butcher is not defined in statute, right? And you know, I keep asking myself, one, what is the right thing to do? Second, what are the politics around all this? We definitely want this to work for everybody, and some of the stigma that may be perceived around this or whatever. Would you be willing to work with us on verbiage and language around this as well to help all the stakeholders, if you will?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That would be no problem.
All right. Thank you, Representative Metza. Anybody else have questions? Any other questions? Hearing none. Representative Metza, any closing comments?
Thank you for your consideration. I know we've got a busy couple months, and as changes come up and we get the language in a little better shape for moving forward, I appreciate the committee's support. So,
thank you. Representative Metza renews his motion that House File 1905 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Metza. What's that? Jerry Anderson, you're up. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 1904 for possible inclusion.
All right, we have House File 1904 in front of us. To the bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is the second stop for this bill. It was in ag policy. And what it does, it makes an appropriation of a one-time appropriation of $1.5 million to the Department of Agriculture to incentivize retail gasoline stations to make the commitment and commit the funding to upgrade their facilities from E10 or up to E15. As you may know, and I think you all have got a handout in your packets, there's a green one here, if you want to take a look at it, that mentions that already in statute, Minnesota, again, is a leader in ramping up the use of biofuels or ethanol in the fuel that's made available to the motoring public. Right now, this year in 2015, 14% is mandated to be made up of biofuel. And in just a couple of years, 2017, that number goes up another 4%, which represents well over a couple hundred million additional gallons of ethanol or biofuel. And we are approaching what's commonly known as a blend wall with our blend today of E10. And we're at the point where we really can't expand the number of gallons anymore with the current rate of gasoline consumption unless we kick up a little bit and encourage more E15 over E10. We also have the flex fuel E85 that is available for use in flex fuel vehicles. But I think I've long said that E15 and blender pumps is the way to go to really increase the consumption of ethanol here in Minnesota. And this bill would do that. It's a one-time grant. And we're trying to kind of pick off the low-hanging fruit that it wouldn't be a terribly expensive conversion. When you have to take up concrete and put in new tanks and piping, it can really get expensive. And what the bill does in working with the Minnesota Biofuels Association to kind of provide some guidance and help, looking at the locations that could make this conversion in a much cheaper fashion, still do everything correctly according to MPCA and EPA guidelines, but to make that change to E15 in a more cost-competitive way. And I'd like to have a testifier, Mr. Rudnicki, talk about what his association would do to help stations that make that conversion, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Please state your name for the record and begin.
My name's Timothy Rudnicki. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Biofuels Association. The Minnesota Biofuels Association is a nonprofit organization dedicated to fostering energy independence, enhanced environmental quality, economic development, and consumer savings through the use of renewable biofuels. And we are indeed in support of House File 1904 for several reasons. We surveyed about 1,700 fuel retailers across the state of Minnesota, and we have come to understand some of the technical issues they face and some of the regulatory barriers that they're confronted with. And what we have found is that that there's primarily an information gap between what can be done with existing infrastructure, whether it's the storage system or the piping or the dispensers. And there's also lots of information needs and requirements and technical support that's required to take advantage of some of the existing infrastructure to make E15 available to many consumers. In fact, right now, approximately 85% of the vehicles on the road today can use E15, which is a blend of 15% ethanol and 85% gasoline. No additional modifications need to be made to the vehicles. We can immediately begin reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Consumers can begin saving anywhere from 7 to 10 to 20 cents a gallon for E15 while still getting a higher blend of octane, which is good for engines. And we can also begin a new pathway toward the biofuel requirements in law in the state of Minnesota. So we are in firm support for House File 1904.
Thank you. We do have a question. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question or a statement. It's a little bit of a grouse. I think what you're doing is fine. Early in our session, Mr. Chair, we had some people come in and present on the E15, and I think what they want to do is good. But the obstacles to this, I think, really reside in some discussions in other committees. The regulations are really burdensome. I saw some firsthand experiences in my district of people that wanted to do the E15, and it was difficult to get out there. And now I see we're spending potentially $1.5 million on regulatory matters. So we're spending money to overcome the regulations that are obstacles to move forward on the E15. And so I think we need to move forward with this, because I agree, I think this is a place to expand. But I just really want to state, I guess, officially that once again, that I think there's some other parts of our government need to be fixed if we're truly going to move this forward. And when we have to spend money to overcome other parts of the government, it just makes me a little bit grumbly. So thanks for my opportunity to vent. I'll be quiet the rest of the
time. Thank you, Representative Miller. Gary Anderson.
I would just add, Representative Miller, and I agree with you, that regulatory burden is, most would say, is extremely high. But most of that comes from Washington. It's the EPA. And the state, the MPCA, is delegated to carry out those EPA regulations. And again, you can have a whole array of cost figures to convert a station over from E10 to E15. And this bill would attempt to work with those that can do it in a pretty cost-effective way and not have to, again, take up concrete and do some of the things, maybe putting in a different valves and things like that, or maybe a dispenser. But trying to get as much bang for the buck as we can, if you will, out of this bill. Right now, I think we have 19 stations in the state that offer E15. It's ramping out really fairly slowly. I think we're maybe the leader in the nation with those 19 locations, but we need to get more out there as we, again, try to work through this blend wall and get more product into the marketplace. And in E15, Mr. Rudnicki mentioned the cost is cheaper, and you really have no mileage deduction with E15. Your mileage is about the same as with E10, so it's really a win-win situation, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Any other questions, members? Any other questions? So, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Bly.
Yes, thank you, Chair. That's a not really a question, but since we had one grousing, I'll grouse a little bit, too. And, you know, once again, we're going down this path saying how evil regulations are, and I really have great concerns about that thought, because I think we're dealing with products that we need for our economic development, certainly, but we also need to protect people and protect people's health. And if regulations do that, if they speak in I view regulations as an extension of democracy, where we're hearing from the rights and protections of other folks within our country and society, and I can see that it makes sense to make sure that when we advance something and we're going to do something to create economic development, that we are sensitive to regulations which protect people, protect our health, protect our communities. And I think it's important to take that into account and not just assume that every regulation is evil. We tend to not be able to see the regulations that benefit us, that make us, you know, do well and all of that, but it's only when we feel impinged in some way by, or inhibited in some way by, a regulation that it becomes oppressive or offensive, forgetting that those regulations may well protect someone else from a bad effect or something. So I just wanted to put that out there as part of our conversation. Thank you.
Jerry Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, I agree with much of what you say, but in this bill in no way would intend to circumvent any regulation. It, again, would look at those locations where not a lot of changes have to be made to do it safely, and we all want that. So just to clarify that point.
Thank you. Yes,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's one other regulatory and safety issue I would like to bring to your attention. With respect to E15, this is probably one of the most thoroughly tested fuels we've ever had in the entire United States. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has been involved, the Department of Energy, the National Renewable Energy Lab, Oak Ridge National Laboratory, 6 million miles of testing and nearly 3 years of in-field use. So I respect and appreciate the concerns about regulations, and I do want to underscore Representative Anderson's point. The whole intent is to make sure we not only comply with but exceed the standards that are set And we're very excited about this bill because we think this is the way to do it the right way. And thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Any other questions from the members? Any other questions? All right. Representative Anderson, any other testifiers?
No, I have none, Mr. Right. Chair.
You know what? I should have been asking that, too. Anybody would like to testify for or against this bill? No, hearing none. Any closing comments?
No, I think we've said pretty much what we want to say, and thank the committee for listening, and I would encourage a favorable response to the bill in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Right. Chair.
Thank you. Chair Anderson renews his motion to have House File 1904 be held over for possible inclusion. All right, time up. Chair Anderson, or Chair Keel, Vice Chair Keel.
Somebody.
Yeah, somebody. Hey, you want to recognize our special guests, too, while I'm walking up?
Well, members, I understand we have the FFA from Aiken here today. Are you spending the day checking out things? Is the instructor want to speak for us? Speak to us? Oh, Representative Luke is there. Would you like to introduce them?
Yes, my distinct pleasure to introduce a group of FFA members. These are from the Arrowhead area. Sort of central and northeast Minnesota, from Aiken County north, Grand Rapids, Hill City, Brainerd area, even approaching Duluth. So anyway, want to thank them all for coming down, and hopefully they can watch us operate here. We're working on some agriculture things, and just welcome them.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you enjoy the day here in St. Paul. Are you here for more than one day? Just for the day.
We thank you for your time and the recognition, members and chair. We happened to come down for a Youth and Government Day and exposure to the operations. It's just a real pleasure that we were able to make our schedule work to sit in on a committee and see some of the formalities and operations on topics we follow. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes, we are going to talk about the importance of agriculture and education and research. So I believe that's kind of your interest, right? Mr. Chair?
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. And before I move the bill, you know, if they want to designate one spokesperson, we could probably have time, Madam Chair, bring them up and they could address the group. That's always fun, and I love putting people on the spot, too. So be thinking about that. So, Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 779 to be held over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair?
And I believe there's a couple of amendments.
Yes, do you have a DE1?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, so, okay. Okay.
So could we go ahead and do the DE1 to get the bill in the shape?
Did you, you probably wanted to talk about your
Wait
bill first.
Okay. I'm going to talk to staff here. So, what this bill is this was brought forth by various commodity groups, but I think all the groups representing agriculture across the state, they went ahead and got together and brought forth a proposal to focus on agriculture research, education, and also rapid response. And so this was the idea that, like I said, a number of groups brought forward. And I do have some testifiers that I believe would speak to the bill if we want some additional information. But this is a work in process as well. We're taking information that we're receiving during the committee, taking all that into consideration because we want a good solid bill as well. And Madam Chair, I see Mr. Nisley's here, and he's going to tell me something about the amendments that I may or may not know.
Oh.
Oh, those are not my amendments, Madam Chair. We'll let the author of the amendment bring them forth, and then I will encourage people probably to vote against them.
Mr. Chair, which do you wish to do now? Bring your testimony.
It's up to the author of the amendment.
Okay. The author of the amendment is Representative Bly. Would you like to address him?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I would. And Representative Hamilton, I'm not going to push these amendments. I'm not going to ask for a vote, but I wanted to have these amendments out there so that I could speak to some of my concerns about the bill. And both amendments address those concerns. One is that I'm not at all in disagreement that we need more research. I think that in that respect, I'm supportive of the bill. I think we do need agriculture research. I have concerns about a board that appears to me not to have any oversight and is spending tax dollar money. That concerns me. And so if there's a way to have a board that can be have some legislative oversight or something that that shows that, that would make me more comfortable. The other issue has to do with the makeup of the board, and you know, it reminds me a little bit about saying that we don't expect agriculture to change fundamentally from where the kind of power brokers are right now, and I guess I'm not certain that that's the case. You know, I mean, I think that knowing from the years I've been in the legislature and as I see, for instance, the organic sector growing and there being greater and greater demand for that kind of agriculture and other stakeholders that I don't see represented on the board necessarily, I'm concerned about putting in place a board that that may continue the status quo without looking at what other possible changes might come down the road that may be important for us to consider as far as research and things like that. So I'm a little bit concerned about that and wondering if there's a way to remedy that or to think about how we might talk about the board and its makeup. And I mean, you know, this is a little absurd, but, you know, for instance, if we had a board we were doing on economic development and we made sure that the board members were like from the buggy and whip folks, and then 100 years later we realize, you know, that the world has changed. They're no longer really a player in all of this. So, and I recognize that's kind of an absurd comment, but still I think there's something to be considered when we look at how we shape a board and the future that we're projecting out there. So if you could respond to a couple of those concerns, I'd really appreciate it. And as I said, I'm not going to push these amendments. Yeah.
Chairman Hamilton.
Madam Chair and Representative Bly, thank you so much for the thoughtful dialogue. And that's why I truly, truly like serving on this committee, to where we can make this even better. And I know that you brought forth some Forever Green initiatives and some others. And so what I'm attempting to do, along with all of your help, is trying to weave all this in to where, you know, I always joke when I say I want it all, right? But I mean it. When it comes to agriculture, rural, urban, if you will, when it comes to all types of productivity as well, and methods of producing this. And that's where on this bill here, it's addressing production research, right? Not so much the method of how, but various production research. And so I want to get it right as well on the bill. And the first thought was, how do we capture additional dollars? Not only the state dollars that we're investing in this, but how do we capture other dollars, whether it's through the checkoff or whatever, so that we can continue growing that resource, that additional dollars. And then this would be information that's available for everybody, right? So we're not trying to exclude anybody in what they're doing as far as the method of practices. This is specifically to, you know, that production component, if you will, to where if you had seed research, for instance, anybody can use that seed, whether you want to grow it organically, traditionally, conventionally, you name it, you would then be able to choose. everybody would have access to that. So I'm not, and we are not, unless anybody would like to speak against it. We're not trying to exclude anybody in this, if you will. You know, that's the approach here. On the board, you know, again, I'm trying to make this right as well, and I appreciate having this conversation. We're going to continue having these conversations. We do have a couple more stops to see if this is the right makeup. But again, we're trying to get be able to secure additional dollars, not only what we're investing here for the human capital at the universities, et cetera, but also have the additional dollars to actually fund the actual research, if that makes sense. So, again, I appreciate the open dialogue, and if we would, please, I'd be more than happy to continue these conversations with you and anybody else on this committee, because, like I said, I want it all, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on House File 779 in favor of?
They all do, Madam Chair.
I guess so. Well, let's ask if there's anybody that would like to testify in opposition of this House 775. Okay. Would you please state your name and identify who you represent?
Bobby King with the Land Stewardship Project. And it's a qualified opposition, I'd say. Some concerns with the approach, though we support the overall goal of trying to get more money to the university for agricultural research with strings on it that make sure it gets spent on agricultural research. And we've devoted a lot of our resources to trying to accomplish that in past sessions. So we strongly support that goal, but then we have some concerns with how this bill goes about achieving it or trying to achieve it. And one Representative Bly brought up is the makeup of the board. We don't think it fully represents the breadth and diversity of agriculture in our state. For example, there'd be no apple growers on it. There'd be no representative of minority farmers. There'd be no one necessarily representing grazing interests or sustainable ag interests. And we think that's an oversight. And also, I wanted to pass something out to the committee. I think it could be real unwieldy to appoint every single a member of every single state and federal commodity group. Here's a list of those. Could I get these to committee members? There's 13 state commodity groups and 23 federal commodity groups. So, for example, there's two that represent potato growers at the state level, one at the federal level. So we'd have three people on this board who represent potato growers, but nobody representing apple growers, just as one example. Also, that would put us at a board of, let me do my math here, that's 36 commodity groups at the state and federal level. We'd have a board of well over 40 people. So it's problematic, we think, that it's such a large board, but yet it leaves so many important interests off the board. Another concern is there doesn't seem to be any transparency or accountability built into how this board operates, and they're going to oversee potentially $18 million of tax dollars a year. It isn't clear if the meetings will be open to the public. It isn't clear how their decisions will be reached, and it's not clear how their decisions will be announced. So we feel like this is a lot of public dollars that needs some very meaningful oversight. The other thing, the last thing I wanted to mention about the bill is, while we keep talking about the university and we support this money going to the university primarily, though there are some other, there might be some other entities that could receive it too, that would be worthwhile. The bill does in no way limits the money to the university. At line 2.10 and 2.11, it says including but not limited to. So we think it's problematic that this board that's not as diverse as it should be, that's going to operate without accountability, is going to oversee $18 million a year that can go almost anywhere. So we do strongly support getting CFANs more money dedicated to agriculture, but we think there's some flaws in this bill that should be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. King. Chairman Hamilton, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And, you know, Mr. King, we have been working very closely with you and others on our advanced biofuels bill, and we made huge concessions, if you will, in order to take language that you and others were promoting. And with that, we said we need support on the research dollars to go along with it. If you're wanting to obtain those aggressive goals, which we have supported and continue to support, said we're going to need to have support on these research dollars too. They do go hand in hand. And I'm a little confused with the testimony as well, as far as criticize the number of people on the board, but wanting to put additional people on the board. I'm a little unclear with that. You know, Madam Chair, we are doing our due diligence around this. I am a firm believer and supporter in transparency as well. I believe if the language isn't here, it will be talking about as far as notifying the public, notifying members on the ranking member and the chairs of the committees as well on when they're going to be taking place. The meetings are going to be taking place, taking full minutes of those meetings so that, again, everybody fully understands what is going on, because transparency in this process is of the utmost importance. I'm trying very, very hard to work with all groups on this, and when we are coming to agreement on bills as they continue to move through the process, I would like all folks to recognize and embrace and maybe even honor those agreements, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we ask if there is any other testifiers that would like to comment at this time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the Minnesota Pork Producers on this issue. First of all, I'd like to say that if you read through the bill, it states that the Department of Agriculture acts as the fiscal agent for this money. As such, you could ask the representative from the MDA, but as such, it's my belief that all open meeting laws, all requests for proposals, and transparency that is normally in effect for the Department of Agriculture on these requests is in effect because they are operating as the fiscal agent for the bill. And so perhaps if you could look up, you can see that the agent from the Department of Ag is shaking his head yes, that's true. So it's not true that there's no oversight or no transparency.
I see him nodding, Mr. Schoenfeld.
Secondly, Madam Chair, if it needs some further clarification, the intent relative to the number of commodity groups that were involved with the legislation was the fact that there are 13 state-designated commodity groups. There are a number of commodity groups, it is true, that have dual, both state and federal authorization. But the real intent here, and maybe there needs to be some further clarifying language, but the real intent was those 13 commodity groups plus basically the pork producers, which is the only federally designated commodity group by themselves, to my knowledge. I'd like to also point out, also respond a little bit to Representative Bly. I guess most of you know that I've spent a lot of time around here, and I guess this is becomes a little personal to me, because I've spent a lot of time around here over the years representing agriculture. I can tell you, I hate to tell you this, I did watch at least on television the Passion play the night before Easter, and I suppose my minister would be angry with me for what I did on Sunday morning, but when I awoke out on my farm in my little log cabin that we built out there next to a pond that we listened to the church bells at 6:30 in the morning, and my wife and I did our religious efforts privately in the morning. But I want to tell you what I did a little later. Later in the morning, odd day perhaps on Easter Sunday, but like most of you, we were home, I spent the day seeding down grass waterways on my farm. And my point being that I think it is a misnomer and misguided to suggest that people that are involved in production agriculture do not do those things which are necessary in order to protect the environment, in order to protect natural resources, and in order to protect their farm. And so I don't think that there is this great divide always between the two sides. I grew up on an organic farm. And the reason it was organic, because my father became blind when I was about 4.5 years old, and the farm stopped. And at that time, all of the agriculture that took place in that farm was done without fertilizer, without herbicides. It was done in the old-fashioned way, because at that point in time, it was in the 1950s. And that's how agriculture was. And all of agriculture was, quote, organic at that time. And I think that there is a necessity to blend some of those practices with modern conventional farming. And I think many farmers do that. And I know that in terms of commodity groups and commodity councils, they look at a number of things, and particularly those things driven by the marketplace. As an example, with regard to the Minnesota pork producers, one of the things that's changing there and nationally is the way they are dealing with gestation stalls. And that is because of the marketplace. The marketplace is demanding different types of ways of raising livestock. And you see that in poultry, you see it in livestock, you see it in a number of ways. And my point being that that is being adopted and funded by these groups in order to meet market demand. And so I think that there are good lessons to be learned on both sides. And rather than being at contentious odds all the time, it seems to me that we would be in better stead to try and work to provide opportunities for all. Now, this particular bill was brought forth in terms of production agriculture with a fairly specific purpose. And that was to help feed the world. As we look at some of the numbers that show us by 2050 that the amount of food in this world is going to have to double. And so I think that this is a very specific bill dealing with that side of production agriculture. There are many other bills out there, including things, Representative Bly, that you've put, for instance, Forever Green and others. We have not come forward as from, quote, the production agriculture side and tried to regulate that effort or to try even to stop that effort. The same is true within regard to other parts of the funding of the University of Minnesota, in the fact that we have got at the University of Minnesota, we have $42 million approximately that is presently being funded for research through the agricultural special. And part of that is things like the MISA group at the university. Part of that, which is the Sustainable Ag Endowment. And nobody from production agriculture ever came in and tried to oppose that kind of involvement. And we see a place for both. But this particular bill is dealing with the production side, and it was brought forth by those who have been involved in that, who have got some expertise in it, who have been supportive not only with public dollars but with private dollars as well in order to carry on that effort. And all we would ask is that you support that effort with us.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Members, before we go any farther, I just want to remind you that we have about 20 minutes left. We need to leave early because we are due on the floor at 12 noon, just so we remember that. Representative Anderson, you had a question?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I work a lot with the Chair Hamilton, and it's amazing how he attempts to include everybody. He reaches out to all people involved on all the issues, and I just applaud him for that. And this bill, in the bio energy bill, he has worked extremely hard on, Madam Chair, trying to put together a bill that addresses the concerns of those interested and involved in it. And I would just say thank you for your work on these bills, Chair Hamilton. And you do reach out and to work with all sides, and for that I say thank you, and I support your bills.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Bly, did you have a question?
I just wanted to comment. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Since you called me out, Mr. Schoenfeld, and I respect the work that you do and appreciate it. And we've had numerous conversations about this issue of there being two sides in agriculture. I want to make it clear that in my comments, in no way did I attack farmers. In no way did I say one farming pursuit was better than another. And I don't believe that. But a concern that I have is not necessarily with farmers who farm in a certain way, but I think the tremendous impact that the chemical industry has had on agriculture. And my perspective is that had there not been a need to have those chemicals go somewhere, had the chemical industry not wanted to have those products enter into some kind of industry, had they not had that need, we might have found other pursuits, other ways to accomplish and increase yield and do the all kinds of wonderful things for farmers in agriculture. I don't blame farmers for that, because farmers, in trying to improve and trying to do the best job they can, try to make avail themselves of the resources that are out there. They weren't doing the research on these chemicals. They weren't necessarily seeing the damage that those chemicals might cause later on. And so I don't blame farmers for that. I don't blame farmers for the practices that they practiced or put forward. But I'm wary about the influence that some moneyed interests may have in the direction that this research could go in. And I think you know, that's not something we can control necessarily. I recognize that. But that's what I'm speaking to. I'm not trying to say that that farmers who use these chemicals are evil or in any way bad or don't care about the environment or don't care about the soil or the water. I think they do, but they also want to make a living, and these products are out there, and they think that that will help them. But we need to have research that examines what that's done to the soil and what it's done to our health care and our general health. And I don't necessarily see that we've done as diligent a pursuit of that as we could. So that's where I'm coming from. I don't, in no way do I mean, because you said it was personal, in no way do I mean to attack you personally. And in fact, I really appreciate the fact that when you come and talk with me, you talked about all kinds of agriculture. I do appreciate that.
Madam Chair, Representative Bly, in deference to yourself, I did not really, I wasn't directing it really at you personally either. Now, that was not my intent. What I was directing it at was the division that we seem to see sometimes between the two sides. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't intended to be at you personally, so I hope you don't take it that way either. But I will tell you this. My wife is a member of the research effort at the University of Minnesota in Waseca. She spends all of her time dealing with something she constantly talks to me about, brassica. I don't know what brassica is all about, but I can tell you that it's Brussels sprouts and other kinds of green vegetables, and she spends about 2 days a week driving up to the University of Minnesota in the Twin Cities in order to take the vegetables they're growing there, and working in cooperation with Birdseye, as an example, and other canning companies around on some of these efforts. And what they do is they test them for the amount of cancer-reducing agents, and perhaps Representative Clark knows way more about this than I do, but cancer-reducing agents that are involved in the production of those crops. And there are many people within the University of Minnesota that believe it is that kind of research on food that will help us prevent disease in the human population in the future. So the University of Minnesota has a very broad effort, as I said. Some effort that goes towards organics. And I would also mention to you that in that case, where all of the organics are presently funded out of, there isn't anybody looking over the shoulder to speak of, because there is no board. It's basically the University of Minnesota determining where to put that money. And that's money coming through the agricultural special in large part. And so, you know, this may not be perfect, but it's no worse than what the present university situation is, as to the fact that only academics are making those decisions. At least that, in my opinion, is no worse. And I think that there's opportunities here to benefit everybody, and that's what.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Chair Hamilton, do you have any other?
I ask for your support. I'll renew my motion, Madam Chair, unless there's anybody else.
Is there any other members that would like to ask questions? Well, I apologize. Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Representative, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, and Mr. Schoenfeld, and Mr. King for testifying on this. I'm a co-author in this bill, and I'm glad I am. And I agree with very clearly with Mr. Schoenfeld. There's an elephant in the room, and that it's called water, and it's called agriculture, and that's an issue that we're facing in Minnesota right now. And it's a larger issue than this bill. It's a larger issue than the biofuels bill, but it exists. And I am one of those who feels really clearly that those who promote clean water and those who promote agriculture are in the same room and are in the same vein. And that there's a lot of room to work in the middle here. And I think one of the challenges actually for this session is to somehow work that out. And there's a lot of dynamic with that. And I could go on and on with that. This bill is also important in that it does provide the public research that we need, that family farmers need. And that fundamentally what this bill is about is making sure that we have public research dollars going into agricultural research. The focus is appropriately in high production agriculture and increasing yields and that sort of thing. As we talk about, if we're going to talk about if there are to be more buffers, the implication is that there's also less land to farm, and that implies that we need to have increased yields. So there's a lot of interlinkages here. My concern for this bill, and along with my support, is that I think it can have a better board. If we were sitting together as a group of citizens in Mankato trying to put together the local food shelf, we would try to have the strongest board we could have. And I think the focus of the board with the commodity groups as it's set up, it makes good sense. But there's also room. I think this board would be stronger and I mentioned this in the policy committee, I still think it's true, that if we had some environmental experts on this board, particularly those who focus on water, if we had on this board someone who focuses on, brings the consumer viewpoint on it, that was brought up, consumers are changing with respect to the pork industry, I think that would make this board stronger. And then the other thing is, I've talked for two years in this committee about, is the value of developing new markets as agriculture changes. So this whole, the ag econ part, I think is really important. And I just think there's room on this board. I'm just asking you, Representative Hamilton, to take another look at the board, how it's configured. Yes, it's research towards high production agriculture. I agree with that. That needs to be done. It's public research that needs to be done for our family farmers, et cetera. But a stronger board, I think, would make this a stronger bill. And so that's my comment on it. Thank you.
Chair Hamilton?
Thank you. You know what? Here's what I think maybe we should do as a committee. Maybe what we should do is do what you just said and sit down and talk in an open forum, you know, I mean, just to discuss the ins and outs. Where am I going with this? I come from a meeting where not everybody appreciated what was in the bill, right? That happens, obviously. And when it comes to agriculture, I'm trying to take the politics out of it, if you will, right? And I keep saying, I want it all. So, I'm going to need some help, right, as it pertains to the department's fee increases, as it pertains to the department's additional FTEs to promote food safety, as it pertains to other interests when it comes to the environment and others. We all want that. As it pertains to educating people and giving them a second chance, right? I want it all. It's been a tough morning.
It has been a rough start. Representative Hamilton, I don't mean to cut you off. Representative Gruenhagen would like to make a comment, right? And we would still like to get the FFA students in, so just a reminder.
Okay, very quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for bringing this bill forward, Rep. Chair Hamilton. But, you know, just based on the discussion, I'd say one thing. One thing I've observed as a public official and being a owning my own businesses and watching how business operates, human nature in general tends to swing to extremes, okay? So I think for a while in our country, we went to extreme chemical use, and now it seems we want to go to, you know, in the environmentalist area especially, no chemical use at all. And what I find is that even the science nowadays has been corrupted to a certain degree by political ideology trying to support those positions. And so keep in mind that I think if you use something to excess in any area, it can be damaging to you. And I'll give kind of a poor example. If I eat candy all day, okay?
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, it probably have a detrimental effect on my health. So, you know, if the rest of you would be a little bit more balanced like I am, and not on the extremes, okay, we could probably come to a reasonable conclusion, okay? But anyway, that's just an observation that has served me well as a elected official and just in my business per se.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, just quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Chair Hamilton, I want to say real clearly, you have set this committee up for you to get the help you need. Be open about what you need. There's a bunch of us on this committee that want to work with you. We want to have the best farm bill coming out of this Agriculture Committee, and we're able to do that. And this is a matter of dialogue. I'm seeking to improve this bill. It's all the bills coming through, and we'll work together to make sure we have a strong bill coming to the floor.
Thank you.
Chair Hamilton, would you like to make any other comments? Shall we invite our FFA students?
Yes.
We are going to lay this over for possible inclusion, correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll renew my motion to have this be held over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you. The motion. Then we'll invite our FFA students for a quick conversation. If you ladies would like to come forward, introduce yourselves, and have a seat there next to Chair Hamilton.
Thank you. My name is Cheyenne Tease. I'm the president of the Aiken FFA chapter.
My name is Andrea Hansen. I'm a vice president of the Aiken FFA chapter.
And we'd just like to say, keep us in mind as this agriculture journey for us has influenced our future, and as we are the up-and-coming generation, these decisions will impact us as we impact the world around us, and we'd like just for you guys to keep us in mind.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody have any questions for them? I will. In all this conversation that we've had today, what's really important, and I have a 12-year-old grandson, and I would echo the same thing. I'm really hoping that his direction is agriculture someday. And he loves it. He was out there all day yesterday, and I'm sure he told his father he didn't need to go to school today because he could go out and work. But that's what's most important about agriculture, whether we decide to be organic or general farmers, we are in animal agriculture or crop science or whatever we're going to do in agriculture. Really what is most important to us is that we have a good environment, we take care of our land. I'm sure you learn that education all the time, and that we want to see the next generation come forward and do the same things that we've done with the land and take care of Minnesota and its wonderful opportunities. So I thank you very much for coming. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick comment. It's wonderful to see two young women who want to do work in agriculture. And I wanted to just tell you, that's a growing movement, which you probably know because you're part of it. But there's an organization called WFAN, Women Farmers and Agriculture Network. Just wanted to tell you about it. You might want to check it out. It's something that FFA could probably, you know, hook into. So let you go on that.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
You know what's cool? It doesn't matter where the students come from across the state in the blue jackets. We have the best and the brightest, whether they're located, Aitkin County or Mountain Lake, Minnesota, or downtown St. Paul. It doesn't matter. When they come before the committee, they're all extremely polished, the best of the best.
That's right.
Absolutely. And we thank your program for your instructors, too, by the way, for making sure that those are effective. We need more instructors, too, so that's a good thing to think about. So with that, members, I suppose we better get going. We have 7 minutes to head to the floor. Meeting adjourned.